The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
Everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are so wrong.
You're so wonderful.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Someone intelligent on the radio. Yay!
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to be with you. This is Look Back Friday on The Doctor Is In. Looking at that call list up there. Well, that's a short one. I will actually have to work this program. Doctor Is In is a co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Is some 400. I really can't know because there's stations being added all the time, but it's a bunch. And, of course, Sirius Satellite Channel 130 and all of our local affiliates and the networks, the various networks that are part of the larger EWTN Global Catholic Network, they too have their apps. You can listen there, web streaming, all kinds of stuff. And this, of course, EWTN cooperates with Ave Maria Radio Communications out there in Ann Arbor, who produces this program. Andrew Krucek is my producer man. He took care of those calls that we've had in the past, lined them up, set them up, thinned them out for the program, and I will get to those. I think that Dave Barry, now I think he's retired, but he was truly one of the most creative, funny columnists, social commentators that I have ever read. Let me just read a little bit, and I don't normally do this. You can't necessarily read something. But his stuff is very readable, and I will do what I can to add inflection. He's speaking to me. There are millions of us boomers. You know, the baby boomers, generally from 1946 to 64. If you were born, you're considered a baby boomer. A lot of them. Post-World War II. And we are needy, needy, needy. For example... We were the first generation that needed to take 10 weeks of night classes to learn how to have babies, which we humans have been doing for thousands of generations with no training whatsoever. Okay. Now that we boomers are getting older, we need more services. One service business you could start is technical support for boomers. Boy, do I know this. I have to call my nephews, 7, 9, 14, whatever age they are. Help! Oh, I don't get my phone. How do I hang up my cell phone? We're having a lot of trouble with technologies these days, particularly if the technology is digital. Now, we know the digital is good. We know that sooner or later, every electrical thing we own, including our toaster, will be digital. We just don't know how digital works. That's right. I have no idea. This is particularly true of digital music. We boomers come from a pre-digital era when all music came in a format known technically as the round format. First, you had your records. You had 78s, 45s, 33s. Remember when you used to have to flip that switch? Okay, some of you don't remember that, but I remember that. On your record player, had 78. My mom and dad had a bunch of 78s. Then 30, 45, and then 33s for the big long play records. You know, they had six or seven songs. And my friends in college used to have these massive display, this auditorium size sound system. You had a round thing that had music on it. And you put this thing onto or into some kind of player that spun it around. And this caused the music to come out of speakers, which were also round. We boomers were uncomfortable. I mean, we were comfortable with the system because you always knew where your music was. It was on the round thing. And it didn't get mixed up. The Beach Boys were on your Beach Boys round thing. Ray Charles was on your Ray Charles round thing. Barry Manilow was in the Barry Manilow bin. And so on. Today, thanks to digital technology, there's no way to tell for sure where in the world your music is. It could be on a tiny chip the size of a toenail that holds 19,000 songs mixed together, which means two things. Satan could be involved, or a reasonably strong ant could make off with your entire music collection. Or, instead of a chip, your music might be on an iPod or some other small digital, extremely losable, non-round thing. Or, maybe your music is on your computer or your cell phone. Or, if you have the really new model, on your toaster. With digital technology, you are never really sure where your music is. This is no problem for today's young people who emerge from the womb crying digital cries. But it's extremely confusing for the rest of us. That's where technical support for boomers comes in. It's a number you'd call for technical support. However, big difference, and I've been noticing this too. The people answering the phone would be as old as the people calling. Most technical support people are 24.3 years old, which means that in order for me to understand what they're telling me, I have to already know enough technical stuff that I wouldn't have to call them. This is what my conversation goes like. Support system. Person. Can I help you? Me. Okay, I have this Vortex sound loin music player thingy my kids gave me for Father's Day, and I'm trying to figure out how to play a song in it. I think I have it turned on, but I'm not sure. I definitely push all the buttons, but nothing seems to come out, and at least I don't. Support person. What music format are we using? Me. Format? Motown. Support person. Excuse me? Me. Chain of Fools by Aretha Franklin. Okay, technically she didn't record it for Motown, but her genre was what, support person. No, I mean what digital format? MP3, WMA, WAV, me. Silence. Support person. Hello? Me. I don't know my format. Support person. Tell me the serial number of the unit. It's a 63-digit number that should begin with either EX93857 or EX93957. Me, without my glasses, of course. I don't see anything like that. You don't know where my reading glasses are, do you? Support person. I'm definitely not enjoying this. Me. Oh, okay, I can't find the serial number. Support person. It's on the bottom. Me. Squinting again. Which side is the bottom? Support person. The side where you insert batteries. Me. It takes batteries? Now, when pagers were big, remember that? I don't know if you remember that. Pagers was a way to tell you that it was one of the first early steps to tell you somebody wanted to get a hold of you no matter where you were. You had no privacy when you had your pager. I wore my garage door opener for about a year because I wanted people to think I was cool enough to have a pager. I wasn't. I didn't know how it operated, and I didn't know what the number meant when it came across, but when people would say, page me, I'd say, okay, just page me. Got embarrassing. Folks would say, I paged you 4 times. You never called me back. I said, was that you moving my garage door up and down? All right, having a little fun. When we get back, I'll jump on one of these calls, which looks like it'll fit right in the slot. between our first soft break and our first hard break. Not heartbreak, hard break. I'm Dr. Ray.
Now, wait a second. Let's talk this over.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Christianity never saw itself as the fulfillment of a political process or a military process. Christianity was always bearing witness to a kingdom ultimately not of this world. The church teaches in Catechism of the Catholic Church that the kingdom of God lies ahead of us. It is brought near in the Word incarnate. It is proclaimed throughout the whole gospel, and it has come in Christ's death and resurrection. The kingdom of God has been coming since the Last Supper, and in the Eucharist, it is in our midst. The kingdom will come in glory when Christ hands it over to his Father. What this tells us is that we are working for a kingdom. For us, the kingdom of heaven is synonymous with the kingdom of God. His kingdom is to be established by virtue of our union with him.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta. 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live. No new age stuff here. Mostly aging middle age. I can't even use middle age anymore, you know that? Because if I used middle age, meaning right smack in the middle of my life expectancy, I'd have to live well into the hundreds. I'd be the longest man ever to have lived, by far. So real good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray. This is Look Back Friday. Let's go straight to Cindy's calling from Michigan.
I have a very dear friend. I've known her for quite a few years. She was always very active in our parish. She's a more charismatic Catholic, real sweet lady, sweet husband, sweet family. And then a little over a year, they started having some demonic attacks. All of her friends have certainly been praying for them. And it just seems to be, they've seen medical doctors, they've seen exorcists. She informed her friends that pretty much her one medical doctor just wrote her off as mentally ill. I've kind of got to the point, being on the outside looking in, where it could very well all be demonic. It could all be mental. It could be a mixture of the two. I really don't know. But what I'm calling about is I just don't quite know how to minister to the family, how to kind of be there for them. If you even mention anything, you know, not being demonic, she gets very offended. She doesn't want to believe it's any sort of mental illness, that it's all this one thing. And I mean, her husband's kind of taken up a lot of the burdens of the household, and he's been, you know, he's certainly burning out. And I just don't know what I can do for her, if anything.
Why do you think? There are demonic attacks? What have you seen or heard?
So they're having this, again, how it's described to me, this parasitic attack of like mites. However, and so they were dealing with them for over a year. although a lot of professionals are saying they don't see them, but they swear up and down, you know, they can still feel them. You know, I just kind of, I know demonic attack comes in all sorts of forms. I know, again, they're very into, you know, I don't even know how to describe it, just demonic influences from letting certain things in, if that makes any sense.
Has she ever spoken of anything she's heard, like voices? Has she ever told you she had certain ideas and you're thinking to yourself, boy, those sound way off. Those don't seem to square with reality. Anything like that from her?
No. It's more just doubt in her face, that sort of thing. Which is why she thinks it's demonic, the negativity of her faith, but also whatever these health issues that are hitting her one at a time, and doctors, all these tests come back as inconclusive, and it's just so strange.
She is convinced that there is some spiritual attack on her because there's no other explanation for it as far as she is willing to listen to.
It seems to be the case, correct.
Well, then you can't say anything. Because if you do, if you push it too hard, she's going to write you off.
Yes, which that's the vibe I got.
Okay. So, basically, I think, Cindy, you might want to just start asking her, well, what do you want to do now? If she says, my newest oppression is, well, what do you want to do now? Have you talked to the priest? What do you want to do? Oh, they don't help. They don't help. I've been to four of those. They don't do any good. Okay, so what would you think, as a faithful Catholic, you should do? I've done everything. I've prayed rosaries, and I've lit candles, and I've gone to Mass, and I've prayed, and my husband prays. Nothing makes any difference. So why do you think this is happening? In other words, what you're doing is you're not going to challenge her. The Church is very clear about this stuff. That, in fact, you really have to rule out psychological, emotional, personal-type problems. You really do, because that's the vast majority of this stuff falls in that realm. And so it sounds like, just what little you told me, it sounds like she's got a great defense built up, which is, there's nothing wrong with me. I am being spiritually attacked. Okay, and that's probably coming from the fact that she's, at some level, embraced her religion very fundamentally. So you're going to have to avoid the direct on, face-on attack and even questioning her. Otherwise, she don't want to hear it, and you'll be discarded into the bin of people who just don't understand.
Right. Yeah. It kind of makes it hard to talk about other things, though. I kind of don't know where the friendship, I mean, we reach out and we kind of chit chat, but there's only so much we can talk about, as I'm sure you could guess.
It may be, Cindy, that this friendship is going to fade. It may be that she's put up so many conditions on the friendship that you have to totally buy into the way she sees things. And if you don't, or the only thing she wants to talk about is her condition as she sees it. And if you try to talk about anything else in only a short order, she's going to revert back to the self-talk. And if that's the case, right, makes it very hard to keep up a friendship.
Yeah, thank God that has not been the case so far. She seems very interested in others. So
okay.
So that's good. But, well, I appreciate your insight. Alrighty. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you. I touched upon it. I didn't go into much detail. The devil can be a defense. Flip Wilson used to have an old comedy routine based upon, the devil made me do it. In other words, I'm not responsible. Whether it's influence, oppression, in extreme cases, possession. If to the degree the devil's involved, or you think the devil's involved, you've got yourself a blameworthy person. Well, not person. Use the word loosely, a blameworthy entity. You know, as a shrink, you're always on the lookout for motives. And that's hard. It's really hard to touch and tap into motives. Motives, by their very nature, can be very, very hidden. The first thing I thought about when I got this call about her friend was that it sure seems like her friend was absolutely committed to saying, the way that I am, in other words, my doubts about the faith, couldn't be the fact that I'm having doubts and I need to explore where my doubts are coming from and find ways to dispel some of these doubts. We didn't spend an hour talking, but she didn't allude to any of that at all on the front end. Instead, the friend of hers was saying, I have doubts because the devil is attacking my thinking. What are you going to do about it? Let's just assume that indeed the devil is doing this. This isn't Cindy's friend's normal to be struggled with doubts. If indeed the devil has a high degree of influence in her thinking, what can she do? Well, she can counter it. Not only by praying, but she can look into answers to these doubts. You know, the devil can tempt you in all kinds of ways. And that doesn't mean you don't have anything to do about it, because you can do things about it. If the devil tempts you, for example, to pornography, well, you can take steps to make pornography not available to you. You can do that. So therefore, the devil's temptations aren't so easily yielded to. This friend, I don't know if she's explored, but looked into, why am I having these doubts? Well, the answer to her is, well, the devil's making me have these doubts. Okay, so what are you going to do about the doubts? And I think that's the whole approach Cindy has to take. What are you going to do about this? These, was it ticks or fleas or mites? I think she called them mites, that nobody's seen other than them. What have you done about them? What do you think the reason for these things are? In other words, you're not disputing what she's telling you, because she's already been disputed. Keep in mind, one of the reasons I said that I drew a conclusion that if Cindy challenged this, it would likely really put a strain on the friendship. And if she keeps challenging it, it would probably fracture the friendship. Because this woman has already been told, at least according to Cindy, by many professionals, by MDs, by others, we find no basis for what you're reporting. We find no basis for your symptoms. Now, I don't know if Cindy's friend started out by thinking, the devil is doing this to me, therefore, that's why I have these symptoms. But when the medical people said, well, we find no physiological reason for your symptoms, Cindy's friend may think, well, that's because the devil's tricky. He's not gonna show you the physiological reasons for my symptoms. He's just going to do it. And you are not going to know why and how he did it. That seems a stretch. But the point being is, if she didn't believe all these people telling her, we don't see reason for this, we don't see evidence for this, this doesn't seem to have any physical explanation, or doesn't seem to have any explanation as what these mites are that are supposedly doing this to your skin, whatever it might be. If she doesn't believe them, I would suspect she's not going to believe Cindy. That's why I suggested that Cindy just don't go at this head on. That's probably not going to go anywhere. And some people are much more predisposed than others to see things as a spiritual battle. I, being a shrink, you would expect that I go to the mind causes first. I go to those kinds of things to rule them out. Doesn't mean the devil can't influence you, but he's definitely harder to pin down. You know, I can do a lot more about me and my thinking than I can if I say, well, he's making me think that way.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I never cease to wonder at is that this Jesus, Son of God, came born in a stable, escapes from a king. When his whole life he's kind of hunted down by the jealousy and the ambition of the scribes and Pharisees and the king. And he speaks and heals to the people. He raises the dead and exorcises the demons. Nobody's grateful. He does all that. He continues to do all of that. And we still don't understand how much he loves us. Isn't that odd?
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can, my whole self, to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray Guarendi, program Doctor Who's In. The version here is Look Back Friday. It was driven by my self-centered need to be able to talk a little more about questions that people call in with. Every question has several levels, and those levels can only be explored in therapy. However, they do indicate maybe a direction one could take to give a little bit of education regarding the matter. And usually when I go off on a tangent, looking back on these calls, it is general. In other words, I offer what I see in similar situations that could be generalities that happen commonly. And I think this is going to happen on this next call. It's very short, which I don't like because I actually have to work today rather than just listen to me. But let me tell you this. You just don't want to listen to yourself. It's not a good thing. It's not a settling thing. Mark is calling from Minnesota. Are you living with your wife?
I am.
Okay, so she isn't saying, I want out.
Well, no, she is.
Oh, okay. What do you have to do in her eyes to make her not head for the door?
Well, she won't tell me.
She won't tell you?
Nope.
And her attitude is, I've already told you and you haven't listened.
Well, she said it's been 25 years of the same. So.
Okay. And her attitude is, to repeat myself, that you've been this way for 25 years. I've told you for 25 years. You've ignored me for 25 years. So I'm not going to waste my breath telling you again.
Yeah, the problem for me is that, you know, I, as in typical relationships, you don't always see it that way because I, you know, have tried to talk about issues when I feel like they've come up, and she's very reluctant to do so, like sort of an avoidant, almost an avoidant type of, you know, dealing with problems, even with our children, et cetera. So, you know, that just makes it difficult because you're always guessing sort of what's wrong now.
For 25 years, this has been the style?
Yes, sir.
Does she say things, Mark, like, it's always the way you look at it, Mark. It's always the way you think about it. Your way is the right way. Is that what she says?
Absolutely.
Which means you've been having a style for the last 25 years to try to convince her reasonably to look at it a certain way, because you naturally believe that your way of looking at it is a better way to look at it. And it may be. If you go out and poll 100 people and 92 of them are going to say, yeah, Mark has the better view on this. But you see, here's the problem, Mark. That's irrelevant. And it's irrelevant because your wife wants to leave. So at this point, I would give you this major paradigm shift. Paradigm shift is totally shifting the way you completely look at the whole picture. And that is, no longer try to convince your wife that the way you're looking at whatever it is, the kids, finance, whatever, don't try to convince her that you're right. Try to find out what she wants, exactly what she wants, because right now, she holds all the cards, my friend. One of the most unsettling questions that I will ask in a marriage counseling session. Now, in Mark's case, it sounds like his wife could probably list, at least from her perception now, this doesn't mean it's necessarily in line with reality, but from her perception, 222 things that Mark needs to change. Whatever. Typically, that's the way it is. Somebody comes into marriage counseling, they have a list a mile long about what their spouse needs to change. And if you ask them what they need to change, they have three things. I might ask, if your spouse changed everything that you don't like about him or her, everything, if they ultimately changed it all, would you stay married? Now you'd think people would say, well, of course. What kind of dumb question is that? Of course. They don't. A good percentage of the time, there's silence. And the silence speaks very loudly. Which is, in essence, I don't like who they are and I don't care what they change. That's one. Sometimes there's another relationship involved, and the relationship that's involved is much more appealing to them. So no matter what their spouse does, forget it. It ain't going to be as good as that other relationship that's pulling them out of the marriage, which may or may not be known. A lot of people don't admit to adulterous affairs unless they're caught. Three is history, and I think that's what's happening here to Mark. For whatever the reason, and again, I don't know, I'm not on the scene. Maybe his wife is unbelievably difficult to live with, and she doesn't see it. I see that all the time in marriage counseling. The person who is most discontent about the other person is the hardest person to live with. They're blind to a lot of their own traits and personality quirks and ways and attitudes. So it may be that his wife is just convinced there's so much wrong with you, and it's been going on for so long that I can't see any way that it's going to change, and my feelings are dead. Now, she's not thinking of commitment. She's probably thinking of feelings. I don't know. I'm not there, but that's what a lot of people say. For Mark, as I said at the very end of the call, she holds all the cards. When someone says, I'm walking out, then it doesn't matter who's right or wrong, because now you, who do not want to walk out, are going to have to do your very, very best to change what you think could be changed as fast as you can. If you're a nag, quit nagging. If you argue a lot, quit arguing a lot. If you are neglectful and you don't pay attention and you sit in front of a TV for 3 hours, quit doing that. Otherwise, your spouse gonna walk out on you. Now, if she doesn't tell him, he's got two options. One, he may know a lot from the past. He may know what disturbs her, even though he thinks it's unreasonable, and he implied that. He implied that, I don't think that what she's upset about is really legit. Okay, However, and he probably tried to show her it was not legit, and then that led to a lot of problems, and she thought he wasn't respecting her viewpoint and her emotions, and she pulled further and further away. So now he's got to shift. And he's got to say, all right, I'm going to really, really try hard to understand her. I'm going to try very hard because she probably has ideas about the way she would like things to be, even if he thinks it's totally ridiculous. And that's what he's got to get down to, because right now he's playing with a 7 high in his cards and she's got a royal flush.
Hello and welcome to The Crux of the Matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes of the Fathers of Mercy. The precepts of the Church, as defined by the Catechism of the Catholic Church, are those positive laws or commandments made by Church authorities to guarantee for the faithful the indispensable minimum in prayer and moral effort for the sake of their growth in love of God and love of neighbor. Simply put, friends, since Holy Mother Church possesses a genuine care for her children and their spiritual growth, she sees to it that through legitimate church authority, certain minimum requirements are to be met so as to help ensure one's personal growth in love of God, neighbor, and the spiritual life. The Catechism of the Catholic Church lists the formal precepts for the Catholic Church's members. They are, you shall attend Mass on Sundays and on holy days of obligation, and rest from servile labor. You shall confess your sins at least once a year. You shall receive the sacrament of the Eucharist at least during the Easter season. The fourth precept is, you shall observe the days of fasting and abstinence established by the Church. And the last precept is, you shall help to provide for the needs of the Church. Rather than look upon the five precepts of the Church as some rigorous code we are oppressively bound to follow under pain of sin, we should instead identify them for what they really are. Guides given to us by Holy Mother Church, just as any good parent would guide their children, to ensure our advancement in a life of prayer and moral virtue and growth in love of both God and neighbor. As Catholics, then, we should rejoice that our faith gives us simple, direct, and concrete guides, precepts which function as sure norms to aid us as members of the body of Christ, to become holy and live our lives as God intends them to be lived. And that's the crux of the matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes. God bless you.
Dr. Ray Durandy, father of 10, 5 boys, 5 estrogen Americans, and I am my grandmother's great-grandson's father. So good to have you with me. My grandma came from Italy when she was 8, and her husband, to be Angelo, and she was Rose. Those names are making a comeback, by the way. He came when he was 17. Couldn't speak English. Neither could speak English. She had a third-grade education. No, I think he had a third. She had the sixth. And that's the way it was. Just 2 generations ago, my grandparents lived so radically different than we live. They had no car. They didn't drive. They walked or took the bus. They didn't lock their doors. They made very little money. My grandfather worked at a factory. He made very, very little money. They lived through the Depression. Their house, big 2-story old house, which is no longer there, cost them $4,000. That's what it was. They had radio. They didn't have any TV. They didn't have anything. The only technical thing they had was a radio. No microwave. They had no. I think they had a record player. I think. Not real sure. And that's the way it was. Okay. Enough reminiscing. We have an interesting call here from Nicole. Her sister, just now, feels is an interesting word. That's my word, feels, but it could be believes. She is not connected to reality.
I have some concerns over my 15, 16-year-old sister. She's in high school. She's a sophomore. And she's been telling me that she's been kind of disconnected from reality. She feels like she's outside of her body. She doesn't feel like herself. She's going to go see a psychologist next week, and we just wanted to get maybe your perspective from a Catholic point of view on what this could possibly be or what we can do to help her.
You want good news or bad news?
Both.
I'll give you the bad news first.
Okay.
I have no idea. I would have to ask your sister approximately 294 questions.
Yeah.
Now, here's the good news. You can ask your sister a bunch of questions. I would ask her. She says she's disconnected from reality. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of ways to interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
What does she mean? Does she have odd kinds of feelings, or is she actually losing touch with reality? She's hearing voices, or she's thinking really crazy things that are scaring her. You want to kind of know if what she's telling you is part of a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
Or ask her what is going on with her friends, with social media, with her relationship with mom and dad. What's happening here? And if she tells you, I've just been miserable the last 7 months, I just don't feel right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You could be either dealing with depression, or you could be dealing with some teenage social problems. You know, what do you
right.
think? You know your sister.
Yeah. One of the really big things was our father. He passed away in 2014, and she was only 8 at the time. And she has a really hard time accepting that she doesn't remember him. She wished she knew him like I did. And that's really been affecting her. The whole online learning has really been tough on her. She has a job, but she still feels like that. She doesn't really hear voices or anything, but she feels like she can see herself outside of her body.
It's not totally uncommon if someone is emotionally distraught about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much your sister continues to think about the loss of your dad. I don't know how much she is frustrated. And, oh, by the way, your sister, if this is a big factor in her existence, the whole COVID response of what we've done to kids has been, in my opinion, as a shrink, unconscionable. Unconscionable. Horrible. So if she's experiencing a lot of that, she's been cut off from her friends, normal social outlets, the things that would put some zest in her life are not there. I could see her struggling with her mood, her demeanor. Ask her, say, how much of this, honey, is what's going on right now? And then the idea that she's having these weird kind of feelings, you know, geez, I don't know, I feel like I'm looking at me kind of thing. In and of itself, that wouldn't concern me all that much unless it's in a much bigger context of a whole lot of struggles in her life. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on, and you're seeing this as a very discontented young lady. Very frustrated, very unhappy, very emotionally struggling. Then the whole out-of-body kind of experience, perception, could be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily indicate, oh my gosh, I'm losing my mind, right? Because that's what I think she's probably afraid of. It's like, what's wrong with me? I'm feeling so weird. This is crazy. Well, no, if there's no other signs of craziness, it's not crazy. So you can reassure her on that. And hopefully the psychologist she sees will practice some form of helping her straighten out her thinking.
Mm-hmm.
As typically, you can get yourself just spinning in your head about all the ways you're looking at yourself, all the ways you're looking at life, all the ways it all stinks, all the ways that I'm unhappy.
Right.
One thing I would just throw up your way. That's a bad way to sound. That sounds like a vomit, doesn't it? I would just throw up your way. Is that it is easy to look at a traumatic incident that happened 8 years ago and say that is the main source of my problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to believe that, but more often than not, there are a lot of other factors playing in.
Right.
That have been intertwined in the last 8 years, not the least of which is maybe your mom struggling to raise a kid,
mm-hmm.
The upheaval to the whole family, the idea that she feels guilty because she can't remember your dad all that much, and you guys remember him, and you talk about him, and she can't talk about him because she doesn't know what you're talking about, because she doesn't remember any of that, because she now feels like she's an outcast and not really part of the family. You're laughing. Am I on target a little bit?
Yeah, very on point.
Mm-hmm. Well, my dear. So hopefully she's getting herself a good psychologist that will explore some of this stuff with her and perhaps reassure her. But maybe you can talk with her and hopefully get her to understand she's not necessarily gone crazy.
Right. Yeah, thank you. That really helps. And yeah, I'll try to talk to her about what else she's been feeling.
I have spoken before about a sad phenomenon that I see, which is the growing up of very discontented teenagers for lots of reasons. Lots of reasons. It's a perfect stew. Family breakdown, one. Less connection with God's another. But even in good families with a connection with God, the social media influence, the peer influence, and especially the peers who are being raised by social media and pop culture, really confuses a lot of young kids. And if a young person is more prone to emotionality, they think and they get their emotions gone, they get real confused about who they are, what they want, what life's all about. And when you get that confused, you develop oddities in your personality. Like, for example, Nicole's sister feels like she's out of her body, an out-of-body experience. Typically, that's considered what used to be called a kind of a neurotic sort of experience. Although, like anything else, there's a lot of reasons why that happens. And it could be just a sign of the sister's confusing sense of self, of who she is. I would really want to know. The main factor here for me, she comes to me as a psychologist. One of the first things I try to ferret out, how unhappy is she? And why? Where is that unhappiness come from? I deal with a lot of adolescent girls where they'll say, well, I just don't feel like I'm pretty. I feel like I'm fat. I don't fit in. There's a lot of girls at school that exclude me. I worried about how I did on my tests, and I feel like I'm not competent. They have all kinds of these question marks surrounding who they are. There's not a natural contentness there. And a lot of that, we used to say peer pressure. Well, the peer pressure is dramatically magnified now because of social media. It isn't just four kids in my somewhat close social circle who are confusing me. It is dozens, hundreds of posts and people and claims and attacks and comments that are out there. And they're taking a toll. I'm telling you, they are taking a toll. And this is one of the reasons why. Now, I'm going to guess here, but I'll bet you. Now, Nicole said her sister's what, 15? I'll bet you. Yeah, I'll give you 5-to-1 odds. That girl has had a smartphone for 2 or 3 or 4 years now, at least. And she's on it. Now, I'm not saying the smartphone is the only thing doing it. I can't know that, and it's probably not anyway. But it interacts. It's a powerful force. that will interact with who this child is. You know, some people wouldn't be bothered by this. Yeah, they'd be obsessed and overly connected to their smartphone, but they're going to live much of life. But some people are not. Some people are just pulled into a vortex, and it's because of who they are. And one other point before I go to break. It's very common for people to look for a precipitating event. In other words, 7 years ago, her grandfather died. And that has been tagged, maybe not only by the family, but by Nicole's sister herself, as a precipitating event. Probably not, and it's probably not even a main event. For the most part, if you start digging in what is making somebody distressed and discontent, you start with the present. What's going on right now? What factors are entering this person's life to bring about this kind of thinking, these kinds of feelings? You don't generally go back and say, okay, is that because your grandpa died 7 years ago? Given that, she may have thoughts and feelings about grandpa dying 7 years ago and how she was ripped off, perhaps. But I would want to know what those thoughts and feelings are intertwined with. Wow. Way past break. Way past break.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
You do not know the work of God, who is working in everything.
Every cell of your body contains a helix strand of DNA made from 3 billion molecules. But only 1.5% of those 3 billion are the genes used to produce the proteins that determine your biological traits. Initially, this caused scientists to label the remaining 2.9 billion junk DNA. But today, scientists are discovering it's probably not junk at all, but critical to our lives and the well-being of later generations. But when asked exactly what good are those billions of mysterious molecules, they really have no idea. But God knows, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody's sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith. And Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology. I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
I really always wish I could jitterbug. I watch people who can do that. I'm just so impressed. I try to look cool, though, when I'm, you know, if I'm sitting at a table or I'm sitting in a seat or something. I look like I'm moving in rhythm so that they can think that if I stood up, I would know what I'm doing. But my wife tells me, Ray, when you try to dance fast, you look like a frog in a blender. Then she says, when you try to dance slow, all you do is just kind of weave back and forth. There's no foxtrot rhythm. You don't know any of that stuff. I'll have to spit out my gum next time. Okay, I don't have a whole lot of time left. I just want one final comment on that previous call. As I said, I'm seeing an enormous amount of discontented teenagers. And that is reflected in the fact that they're getting diagnosed depression and bipolar all over the place. If you look at the statistics, and especially since the COVID response, if you look at the statistics, they are flat out off the charts. They have rocketed through the stratosphere. And nobody is questioning the untoward side effects of what we're doing. Total alteration of society. And one would be surprised at this kind of stuff. And you know, Nicole did, she did cite that. She said that a lot of what was going on was because of the COVID shutdown with her sister, shutting off an awful lot of the things that could have balanced out her sister's blue mood. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. Thank you, Andrew Krucek. I appreciate all the company you folks give me. Please walk with God. Don't ever get off that walk. If you fall down, get up again.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.